another sign there, JP, that we are well on our way to the Brook Park Dome happening.
Yeah, I think we can officially say that the we'll stop the fight. It's over. I saw, by the way, I don't know if you saw it or not, in Cleveland.com today, they had one of those the political cartoons. I used to like political cartoons. And in like seventh grade, I had a teacher that made us write, like we had to like cut out a political cartoon each week and then like write about him. And ever since then, I've kind of just enjoyed that type of stuff. Anyway, basically just making fun of Ronayne the entire time. I was like, Ronayne, you lost.
That's a tough one.
I was imagining if I was Chris Ronayne being because like getting the political cartoon is a pretty high honor. Like to the point where like if someone made a political cartoon of me and you, and then, like, did the thought bubbles attached to it and everything, and, like, it made it to Cleveland.com, I'd probably frame it. Like, that's how cool I think it is. But Ronayne probably didn't love it.
It was funny, though. It's all part and parcel, right?
Well, is it such a... I mean, I said I'd frame it for a reason, right? So, like, is it such an honor to be even made into a political cartoon at that point that he's probably just like, this is pretty sweet? Like, does Ronayne care about being right or wrong in this instance? Or does he just care about getting his name out there as often as possible? And he's done it.
He's done it. I also like the fact that he came in studio. So I've softened a little bit on him. I still want to make fun of him from that dog won't hunt thing. But it's one of those things where I think you won't acknowledge it publicly that you like it, but maybe you have it framed at home. Hey, this is part of my career and I got made fun of and it's okay.
I mean, maybe because he's on the losing end of it. Maybe it's not the greatest thing in the world for him.
It still smarts right now. Maybe when he goes to Brook Park in 6 years to watch a Browns game, maybe then he's like, water under the bridge.
See, but you being more relaxed on Ronayne today tells me that Ronayne in a few years is going to be all right to go to those Browns games at Brook Park. And people will just be like, oh, yeah, you did have a hand in this, didn't you? You're an all right guy.
They're going to forget he was the op.
I think they're going to forget that he was the dog that tried to hunt.
So there was a takeaway from the NBA draft I didn't see coming. And we saw it actually impact the Cavs last night, as they have a draft and stash player they took with their 58th pick. And it was just this conversation that started to evolve. And, you know, you and I have kind of scoffed at the face of the NBA conversation, or at least I have, because the guys have got like 30 guys that are the face of the NBA. How can that be bad for you? But given that we had five more French players drafted, the entirety of the NBA draft came with like, I think it's like 10 guys that could be draft and stash candidates over those two rounds. I thought it was really interesting, some of the national discourse, and I think we heard it here too locally, that the global growth of the NBA has somehow become a threat to its popularity in America. And I just, it kind of misses me because, like, I think 15 years ago, I don't think we were ready for an international player to be one of the premier faces of the league. I think now Giannis is. I think Jokic is. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it diminishes from the American ability to create and put out incredible NBA players, American-born NBA players, a la Anthony Edwards.
Yeah, so there's like seven things on my mind when it comes to this conversation. And I do think a lot of this is sparked by the idea, you know, listen, SGA wins the MVP award. That's what eight straight international players have won the MVP award, or eight straight MVP awards have gone to international players, I should say. But I'm looking at the draft as a whole, and you're right about the stash and draft and everything associated with that. But look at the first 11 picks, Nick. The first 11 picks, yes, there are some international players in there. VJ Edgecombe is from the Bahamas. There definitely are, but how do you know VJ Edgecombe? You know him from college. Mm-hmm. Like the first 11 players of this draft, we're talking, the prime selections all played in college. They're all, you saw them on your televisions. And we talked about this just a couple days ago, the idea that the NIL is making the college game so appetizing. Pull up Illinois' roster. All it is for the upcoming season is just a bunch of different guys that played in Euro. And they're understanding that playing in the college game, you can make so much more money. And so I think what we're going to see here is we're going to see a lot of these guys that you'll become familiar with because they played in the college game. And because they played in the college game, it won't be as much of a shock. Again, like VJ Edgecombe, for instance.
Well, but I think we've drawn on parallels of this in baseball. And it's like, well, okay, here, but Giannis speaks fluent English with just a slight accent. Jokic speaks really, really good English, whereas, like, 25% of baseball might not speak English. All the Euro-born players coming over speak clear and fluent English, and so I don't think the language barrier is there, and I just think it's normalized. And to what you're saying, it used to be like, he's a European player. He's a college player. He's a high school player.
Yeah, we never saw the Euros.
Yes. And
that was the problem.
But now the buckets are all kind of intertwined in a way.
We're going to be able to see them, and I think that's the different part here.
But I think they're all intertwined. It's not just, well, he's a Euro. Well, he's a Euro with college experience. He's a Euro that's a draft and stash guy. He's a late bloomer. Like, there are subsets within it. And honestly, like you mentioned SGA, I don't think the casual NBA fan knows he's not American.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, he did wear like the Canadian flag as his shorts during the parade and stuff like that. But I think more people than not don't understand that he's Canadian.
So
America's top hat. It basically counts.
I feel like this is a rehashed way of, and I want to harken back to 15 years ago when people said, well, an international player can never be the face of the NBA. Americans will never buy it. It's bought. And I also just think this myth that, like, it's not that America in America's dominance in basketball is waning. It's just other countries are growing. And you do have, I mean, what, five French players drafted last night? France is the other great basketball superpower now, but there are other countries that are right behind them in terms of the growth of the game. And it's like, I don't, like, as long as you still have, for every Jokic, you have an Anthony Edwards, I don't see this as a crisis. I see this as probably the best globalized game in all of sports. All of American first sports, meaning like soccer has become incredibly globalized, where you almost have everybody from every country playing it. Well, but that started in Europe. This is the American sport that has, I mean, copious amounts of talent coming from every single continent. In a way that baseball hasn't kept up with, certainly in a way that the NFL wants to.
They want to. They make efforts for it, but it's not happening.
Well, it's not happening yet. I think that could be where, but that's going to take. I mean, it's taking the NBA 30 years, right?
This was David Stern's big push.
Yes.
This wasn't Adam Silver's big push. The international game was David Stern's big push, and you can credit Jordan in a lot of ways for making it go as global as it did, and then LeBron picked up that baton and he carried it nicely. But I don't think people are scared of the foreign players or liking foreign players. I think we're, as a society, I think we're more scared of just players we don't know. And I think that's the bigger problem. Like, I would, in my opinion, like, when it comes to the G League, guys that come from the G League that I didn't watch play in college and have no association to, I have a hard time picking up on those guys. I do. I thought the G League was disastrous in many ways for the growth of the NBA because they went to these other spots. That's why I think the NIL is so great for the game as a whole, because the NIL is forcing these kids back over to the college game where they get better coaching, by the way. But then they're in these spots where you actually get to watch them and you get to see them play. And do I think they could do a better job of that? For sure I do. I think one of the best things the NFL has going for them, Nick, is the idea that in college football, you watch those guys for 3 years and you get to know them all. Even bad NFL players you have an association with because you watched them play in college.
So I do think that this identity crisis has hurt the NBA draft. That we'll agree with. Because it's like V.J. Edgecombe is kind of the rare guy. But like last year, Olivier Saar and Zachary Risacher.
So last year was awful for the draft in this regard. Last year was absolutely awful. But I think that part of the draft is changing, though. Like, I think this year is more a representation of what you're going to see moving forward.
Well, in fairness, in 2026, we have an incredible American class with Carlos Boozer's son. I'm trying to forget the...
Fanton gave like seven names of kids that he's like really excited for. And like, it's supposed to be a really cool NBA draft, but a lot of that comes with the idea of, like, it's a lot of what happened this year, where you're going to look at the top 11, you're going to know some of these names because of them playing in college basketball, even if they're not necessarily from, you know, West Virginia or Colorado.
But I think people looking at this and going, the global growth is becoming a threat to the NBA in America, meaning that NBA fans cannot associate with their favorite player. There's part of me that's just like, You think Milwaukee fans give a rip that Giannis is from Greece? I don't.
No, and like, tell that to Dallas fans that were so sad that Luka left.
Honestly,
you think they cared at all? No, they just wanted Luka.
Didn't we love the Delhi thing? Like, didn't we love Mozgov and the fact that he was one of the few NBA players that could not speak English?
I always thought Delhi and like and Chetty Osman, for instance. I always thought those guys, we all loved him, but I thought we loved him because they were foreign more than any actual reason.
I think actually that's a very good point, but I even think like the novelty of it is worn off. And I just, I like, I, It's like criticizing the NBA for being 30 years ahead of any other major American league. And I'm like, no. I think you're missing the point. I think this is like, even the NHL, like, okay, you've got Russia, you've got America, you've got Canada. I know Finland and a few of the, like, there are other places that put hockey in it. But if you do America versus the world, good luck.
Mm-hmm.
The one way you might be able to save the All-Star game now is America versus the world. And the same thing with the Olympics. You're going to be able to take, this is going to take one time for America to put their best players on the court and get an ass whooping for people to all of a sudden be like, wait. But not in a bad way. In a way that adds actual intrigue to the game that America just isn't running over everybody else.
As long as people from Cameroon still want to go ahead and play for Team USA, then we'll be all right. Right, Joel Embiid? He's the least American player of all time, and he played for Team USA. There's some rules there. I mean, it's there's some rules. You're right in your big point that obviously...
I won't tolerate Embiid slander. That's a fine American man right there.
Embiid is open market. Yeah, he's basically Uncle Sam.
That is fine. When I think of Embiid, I think of apple pie.
I think of a hot dog.
I think he's got those chubberalls, the overalls that are they're in the shade of the American flag.
Yeah.
I think of 4th of July. I think of all of it. Mac?
I think he wore those pregame when he was at Kansas.
Yeah, I actually have a pair of those. The problem is they're not built for men with long torso, so they drive right down Main Street in a way that is, I mean, you can't. I'll be like that guy earlier on the street.
Yeah.
Everyone's going to know everything about me.
Naturally.
But Cheverals.
So
Making for fat men.
But I think someone like Tyrese Proctor, who the Cavs took last night, is a perfect example we're discussing, though. He played at Duke. Everyone knows him because he played at Duke. How many people know he's Australian?
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, that's not even, and then by the way, when you found out that he was Australian, did you think to yourself like, oh, wow, that's how wild is, no, you're like, okay, yeah, that happens in today's game.
And can I tell you the thing that I think is going to happen is that you have all of these insanely hardworking, just the attitude of international players and college players has changed versus the AAU circuit. And I do think it's going to have a positive impact on the American game, on American prospects, because it's not just going to be Rapper's Delight where everybody wants to hang out with James Harden and a bag of $300K in cash. I think you're even seeing it with some of the mores that you're getting from young guys like Anthony Edwards. And like, I know SGA is Canadian, but like SGA, like Tyrese Halliburton, that they're not maybe prone to the same thing that the generation was before, when people felt like with guys like Durant and LeBron, who had maybe lost some of that relatability. I actually think the Euro bend here, and I would say the international bend, might be helping curb some of the things that people don't like about the culture of the NBA. I think it's its greatest asset, not its biggest weakness.
Well, think about it. We're going to go through a stretch here where it'll be Giannis was the best player on the planet, and Jokic is the best player on the planet. And then if the handoff goes the way it's supposed to, it'll be into Wemby, who's the best player on the planet, and they're all not from here.
And that is a challenge that American players will answer to, and I think that's a good thing for the game. 216-474-0092. It was a takeaway from the NBA draft I did not see coming. But does the NBA have a identity crisis with the international takeover? Spencer Davies, we'll skim that in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan. To talk about night two of the NBA draft, two new Cavaliers we welcome on. The man has many, many jobs. He used to work with us here on 92.3 The Fan in Cleveland. You also know him for the Cavs on SI. You know him from Babcock Hoops. You know him from Close Up 360. He's a gentleman. He's a scholar. He's Spencer Davey. Well, welcome to the show, buddy.
What's up, Nick?
Oh, wow. Well, that's all you got for me?
I didn't say anything. Hi, Spencer. How are you?
Hey, JP.
I really felt like I gave you this huge buildup. Hi, Nick. Okay, that's it.
Hell of an intro.
Oh, now we landed the plane.
Silly me. I was like, oh, he didn't say hi, Jonathan, so I thought you were concerned about me for a second there.
No, that too.
Okay, yeah. Definitely that.
We were both definitely very concerned here.
Yes.
So I don't know if you heard, but we got into a conversation in the previous segment about how there's this concern about the American interest in the NBA because of the influx of international talent. I view it differently. Do you think that having this many Euros as the face, or international players in general, is as the faces of your league, is that something that might disrupt the American interest in the NBA, do you think?
Maybe a little bit, but look, man, I mean, I like to see the game played the way that it is internationally. It's faster. It's more up-tempo. There's a lot more passing. And I think that you have this melting pot in the NBA between what people do here in the States and, you know, you have the flash, you have the sizzle to it, and then you also kind of combine them into being teammates with players from overseas who may be playing a little bit more finesse style, a little bit more of your run and gun. So I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. And I think it's just kind of a combination of two styles. And it's almost like EuroLeague on steroids, to be honest.
Yeah, my way of it is like, it doesn't really matter if you're European, doesn't matter any of that stuff. Just matters if we get exposed to you is all I really care about. Like, part of the reason why I think the G League doesn't work in so many ways, obviously the coaching isn't as good as the college game, but it doesn't work because the fans don't get to know these guys in the G League at all. And then they pop up and it's like, hey, you could be from down the street and I don't know who you are.
Yeah, no, and that's what's tough. And I think that equally when it comes to international prospects, not like you've got Liga A on your TV or you have any type of Virtus Bologna on the screen across from you. You just kind of surfing around and you don't really catch too much of that unless you're like a really diehard fan who's, you know, scrolling around Twitter and finding highlights from VTB or your highlights from even the NBL in Australia and the BAL in Africa. Like, these are guys that are being developed over and time again, because the NBA has partnerships with a lot of these guys and a lot of these organizations overseas. Starts with Basketball Without Borders, then you look into the NBA Academy, and that's the kind of stuff that it's got a global reach. And that doesn't say that the development here is bad by any means. It's just that it's expanded. And I think that it's harder for the general audience to connect to that because they're not seeing it in front of their eyes. Like we used to see in college, a lot of guys would stay longer at one school, and you'd be able to kind of grow with them as they would develop, and you would see it happen in front of your eyes. You don't see that as much now in college. You see a lot of school hopping. NIL is obviously a factor, and, you know, I'm not here to say one way or another whether that's good or whether that's bad, but it just changed things. So it's harder for the casual fan to connect a little bit more with prospects because of that.
All right, Spencer. The Cavaliers taking two players in the NBA draft last night out of Duke with the 49th pick, Tyrese Proctor, and then the draft and stash Saliu Niang from Italy. Walk us through the Cavs' two second round picks from last night.
Okay, so I would say I'm not an expert on either of them. Definitely know Tyrese Proctor a little bit more. Two or three years ago, this guy was a five-star recruit out of high school. And the fact that he came over from Australia to play at Duke, one of the most prestigious universities in the entire country, and as we know, one of the most amazing programs in college basketball, just with Coach K and then obviously John Shire taking over, you know that that has to signify the kind of talent that Tyrese Proctor is. At that time, he was projected to be a first-round pick over that time. But then, obviously, you get at Duke and you play with a ton of talent, but to me what speaks to Tyrese's abilities is that he was in a starting lineup in which all five guys this year were drafted. And I think that is not anything to scoff at. You obviously have Cooper Flagg, the number one overall pick, going to Dallas, Con Knepel going over to the Charlotte Hornets, Kaman Malawak over to Phoenix, and then Sion James early in the second round going to the Hornets as well. So I think that's nothing to scoff at, the fact that he's able to play with talents like that and to have obviously played alongside other NBA talents in his career at Duke. And staying at one school, I think, is really attractive to the Cavs. I know that Mike Gansey, their GM, was talking a lot about on and off the ball, how he's been able to play multiple different roles, and the fact that he can shoot the ball, and he's had a steadily increasing jump shot from beyond the arc, 32% to 35% to 40%. And then obviously the size, 6'5", probably still growing too, and has some length to him. I know he's not as big as you would think, but Matt Gansey did say that he added 10 to 11 pounds when they went to go see him for his pro day. So they believe that this is a prospect who has already plenty of development going in, so it's not a completely from scratch thing, but there's also still upside there to be coached, and that's Kenny Atkinson's specialty. So the fact that he already is going to have a guaranteed roster spot speaks volumes, I think, to what they think of him and the fact that he's going to be a part of this team and the big club right off the bat.
What'd you make of the fact that they really went after, you know, two guards instead of doing anything as far as the big men are concerned?
Well, I think that with the big men, it would be really hard to find somebody that would play now at 49 or at 58 for that matter. I also think that it's just probably something in the back of their minds to where maybe they have a move already in mind when it comes to the backup five. And they do believe a lot in Dean Wade, but I know that Dean Wade and Isaac Okoro, those guys are definitely some players that they might be looking to listen to calls on. So those are also things that come to mind, I think. And I don't think that a rookie in the late second round is going to be somebody that's going to contribute right away as a backup big. I feel like between Evan Mobley, Jared Allen, and Dean Wade for now, you've got enough there. And I'm sure that Kenny Atkinson will have his kind of tweaks in there too to figure out what's best for that front court. But yeah, at 49 and 58, I don't see a big man being right into the rotation right away like something like Tyrese Proctor. And to just kind of go a little bit against that point too, I feel like Salu Niang, even if we don't see him at all, he is definitely a forward. He's a small forward / power forward, rail thin, but he's, you know, 6'7", and he's got a lot of length to him.
Spencer Davies on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. So we're not quite halfway through the offseason, but with free agency coming up on Monday, this is where things start to happen. If you had to guess which way the Cavs go, minor move, no move at all, major move, where do you think they end up going over the next 2 weeks?
I don't think they really do much at all. They've got to figure out what's going on with Ty Jerome and Sam Merrill first and foremost. I'd probably be surprised if they brought back both. If you were to ask me, I think that it would be more likely if, you know, Ty Jerome came back than Sam Merrill, because I think Sam Merrill is going to, you know, be making upwards to $7 to $8 million somewhere else. Ty Jerome, though, could also have suitors. Like, Ty is definitely the ball handler they need. It is somebody that can facilitate and can organize an offense. But a lot of teams need that too. So there's going to be some competition for Ty Jerome, in my opinion. So those two is really the main focus, I think, for the Cavs. Yes, again, I go back to listening for offers on guys like Isaac Okoro and Dean Wade, I think would be really advantageous, especially knowing the second apron restrictions that come into play. If they were to sign and trade one of Ty Jerome or Sam Merrill, I know that they would not be able to get players back. They would only be able to get picks back. So that's also something that hampers them a little bit. Only minimum contracts are really what they're able to go after. So they're limited in what they can do. But I still think that we were glossing over the fact that they went out and acquired DeAndre Hunter at the trade deadline, and that happened only a few months ago, and he's going to have an entire training camp with this team, an entire summer with this team to really get to know him, and also for Kenny Atkinson to get into the lab and see, hey, maybe we throw him in the starting lineup. Hey, maybe we throw him at the four or at the five because he's got so much length and ability on both ends of the floor. So I feel like that would be the biggest acquisition they could have made was at the trade deadline more than what they can do this summer, obviously because of what they are restricted by with the second apron.
Yeah, how do you think DeAndre's role is going to change from last year to this year?
That's a really good question. I think last year, the fact that he came in mid-season, they did not want to mess with what he had going on. He was really good off the bench for Atlanta and was doing some really good stuff as far as creating his own shot with the Cavs, which we didn't see much with in Atlanta. I think that his jumper was in really good shape. And defensively, I still think there's a little bit more we can see from DeAndre Hunter. He covers a ton of ground, but I would like to see him, you know, move his feet a little bit more, maybe get more active on the defensive glass especially. I think that Kenny will look to ways to put him in better positions to be successful there. But I think that just involving him offensively, I don't think that this is a role-playing type of player. I think DeAndre Hunter is definitely somebody who could be a sort of core player for the Cavs. I think that he's that good, and he's still got a little bit of room to develop yet. And I feel like he contributed a lot last year, and it's unfortunate that he had the thumb injury in the playoffs that really took him off his game. And this guy is the wing that I feel like Cavs fans have been searching for all these years, and they just all of a sudden forgot that he's there. So I have a lot of high hopes for DeAndre Hunter, and I think a lineup with him and Evan and maybe a bigger forward like a Dean Wade, if he's still around, can really do a lot of damage. And I think that having that takes a lot of pressure off guys like Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell because, you know, DeAndre can do stuff for himself.
Spencer, the Cavs have quite a few young players, none of whom were really in the rotation of the playoffs, but Craig Porter Jr., Naquan Tomlin, Isaac is still here, but we'll see about that. But Luke Travers, Jalen Tyson, Amani Bates, Proctor. Of those young guys, who do you think has a chance to take this offseason program, the first time they've had one with Kenny Atkinson, and maybe force their way into the rotation and maybe becoming that one or two of the missing pieces next year?
I think CP, Craig Porter Jr., and Jalen Tyson have kind of that grandfathered in rule. Just based on where they've been and how much work they've put in. Craig Porter Jr., first of all, I think should have gotten at least some run in the playoffs against Indiana when Ty Jerome was struggling. I still don't understand why he didn't. I think he would have brought a toughness factor. He would have definitely gotten you on the glass in those hustle plays. And he's able to create for himself, but he's able to touch the paint. And I think that we saw that first year with Craig Porter Jr., that he is not afraid of anyone. He attacked Joel Embiid's straight baseline drive in that amazing game against Philadelphia as a rookie in those closing moments. I think that those are things that show you that he's ready for that next step and that next, you know, responsibility. And I feel like he's earned that. You know, he's gone from Exhibit 10 to two-way to all the way to the big club. So that's certainly admirable. And with Jalen Tyson, they drafted this guy last year knowing that he was going to have that Josh Hart type of role. He's going to be the hustle guy, keep possessions alive, and whatever you get on the offensive end is a bonus. And, you know, he's got a little bit more size, got a little bit more length. He can definitely defend the way that we watched him play last year in his limited time. Was really effective, I think. He's got a long way to go with the jump shot, I think, yet. But I feel like he's definitely a rotational type player that they can have. The two-way situation I'm really interested in. So the only guy they have right now on contract is Naquan Tomlin, and that's the only two-way contract they have. Amani Bates and Luke Travers, that's up in the air yet. They're trying to figure that out and iron that detail out. Amani, I know, would, if he got the two-way contract again this year, this would be his last year to be eligible for a two-way contract with the Cavs. So that's an interesting thing. And obviously, Luke Travers, he has been on the outside looking in as well, and he had some injury trouble. Same with Amani last year, so it doesn't really help their cases. But we'll see what happens here in the coming week or so and figure it out what the summer league roster looks like and then obviously what the two-way situation is.
Spencer, away from the Cavs, what is your most interesting just storyline for the offseason?
Ooh, storyline. Interesting. I think... is this from the draft or just in general?
No, just in general. Like, what are you excited to see play out? Could be a coaching search, could be a player on the move from one team to another.
Okay. I think, one, New York figuring out who they're going to hire as their head coach. I think, you know, obviously the East is a little bit more open, as everybody's been saying. I still wouldn't count out, no matter what, Boston's got a great culture. I know that they just traded away Drew Holiday and Kristaps Porzingis, and they had to get under the apron. But I don't foresee them taking a huge drop like everyone's predicting. You know, Indiana, seeing what they do in response to Haliburton not having, you know, a healthy body and having that Achilles injury, terrible, terrible timing. And then Milwaukee, you know, obviously – everybody looking at the Giannis situation, whether he's going to stay, whether he's going to go. And it sucks, too, there that Damian Lillard's got the Achilles injury. He's got three Achilles injuries in the postseason. Just got awful. But, yeah, I guess just to see how the East takes shape. I'm really intrigued by Orlando and Detroit. I think they are definitely there to take their next steps and what they have going on. So I don't see this as something where the Cavs have just this easy road to get right back at the top of the East again and try to cruise through the playoffs. They're going to have competition no matter what it looks like on paper.
Spencer, always great to talk with you. What a guy. I mean, just a hell of a guy.
Spencer, you better answer
you
this
got
in like
some,
the...
I mean, you're such a, that's a person. What a
just
person.
Just for my
we're
own sanity, will you just be like,
and,
thank you, Nick, so
you know,
much
your
speaking to me this way.
Future in this business is so incredibly
what a
bright.
Mensch you are, that Nick Wilson.
One day, you're going to get married and have a beautiful family. I mean, the world is your oyster, Spencer. We appreciate you.
Thank you so much, Nick. And thank you, JP, for this amazing appearance. I truly appreciate it. And I can't wait to come back on.
That's good. Really good. That was, nice. That's exactly what we're looking for. Great stuff, buddy.
Later, guys.
Spencer Davies there. Cavs on SI. Also Babcock Hoops and more on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. He really nailed it.
Well, I mean, he fell short of saying he loves us.
It's true.
You know, when you tell nicer. Us that you love us, that's it goes a long way,
that's
right,
true.
Nick Shook?
And then we're like, hey, we love you too.
That's exactly how that goes.
It's people promoting people. It's people, positive people. That's what we are.
The old triple P.
We'll react to Spencer Davies in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan. I don't know if it's going to be this Proctor kid. I don't know if it's going to be Jalen Tyson. Both of them do have an interesting through line that they're kind of... They're jack-of-all-trades, master-of-none kind of guys. Like, if you ask what's the elite trait, you can't find one between the two of them. But both can handle the ball. Both can shoot a bit. Both can do kind of every defense. They're kind of equipped to do that. Like, they're kind of equipped to do everything really well. And if you can't draft superstars, those are the kind of guys who end up being the connective players that really set the difference for teams like the Cavs. And what I like, again, we're not gonna do huge analysis on Proctor or certainly Jalen Tyson, but I do think where the Cavs go from here, and where I hope Kenny Atkinson can separate himself from JB Bickerstaff, is making sure you can still develop young talent while you're winning. And those a lot of coaches can do one of those things. I think Kenny's proven in Brooklyn he can do both. That's what my great hopes are for him here, because that would just add another layer of value to him.
Yeah, I mean, and Proctor did get better with each year, and he got better at the three ball, too, in particular last year. So, like, there is upside there. I think it's interesting. You know, he's 6'5". Some places had him at 6'6". Other places had him at 6'4". But his reach is very impressive. He's supposed to play like a 6'7" type guy. But what's interesting about that to me is that when it comes to these bigger guards, and you notice, I don't know if you picked up on it or not, after Cooper Flagg, the next seven straight picks, Nick, were all guards.
Yeah.
And what was the common theme there? There was one out of those seven that was under 6'4". Like these bigger guards. And obviously the Cavs, we've talked about their guard situation and how you got two undersized combo guards and everything associated with it. But I do think it's interesting. Like the NBA draft paid attention to that, and I think the Cavs paid attention to it as well in their only pick. You know, not just drafting guards, but they drafted guards heavy, but also these bigger guards as well.
After listening to Spencer and just kind of reading the tea leaves this week, does feel like we are getting farther and farther away from any sort of consequential move for the Cavs this year.
That was the vibe Spencer was giving off. I still maintain that Kobe Altman is a wild card of sorts, just like Anthony Alant. He's a little bit of a wild card. And it might end up being the summer of almost, which you've dubbed it. That might end up being the reality of it all. But I remain very open to the idea that there's even trades that we hadn't even thought of that man is willing to pull off.
So I think specific to what you're saying, the reason why I'm saying it, it's starting to feel like it is, I think there has to be one or two trades before the Cavs make their trade. Meaning I think there are dominoes that have to fall to unlock the Cavs moves.
Okay.
And I don't think the Durant thing was that, and I don't think the Bain thing was, because I think they're both definitive trades of, no, that's that team being done. Like, maybe the Rockets could get in on Jared Allen, I guess, hypothetically.
I mean, people are suggesting the Rockets can still get in on Giannis right now.
Yeah, I just don't...
Rockets aren't necessarily done themselves.
I think Giannis to San Antonio just makes the most amount of sense if Giannis doesn't want to... stay in Milwaukee.
My theory on it right now is that he stays in Milwaukee, looking at how easy the East has become. And I say easy, obviously, just relative to the West.
But yeah, like maybe a Jared, because Jared makes $20 million a year, or $25 million, that's nothing. Like that is, in terms of NBA landscape, finding salaries that match $20 to $25 million. And you might be able to get like a Jabari Smith, who allows to give you size and shooting and might pair better with Evan, who can then become your full-time center. But even then, like, okay, then I think you need a true backup center.
So are you calmed down on the, obviously you're calmed down on the Cavs portion of this, but is that a direct reflection of you maybe being calmed down to the summer of havoc that we were once promised across the NBA?
No, I still think it's going to be crazy. I think the Cavs are right to pick and choose where they are. I think it might be end up being paralysis by overanalysis, but like in the end, listen, I think they need to make major moves to get where we want them to go. And I think in the end, they're going to talk themselves into, well, now that the East is the way the East is, our path has never been easier. And my point would be the path is not what stopped you. Your fit, mm-hmm. Whatever thing that there is between all these players, as much as they like each other.
Yeah, like I like the Pacers.
That's what stopped
the Pacers isn't what stopped you.
Yes. And by the way, I think the Pacers would have been the NBA champion if not for Halliburton's injury. But like guys, if the Cavs had pieces to fit around Donovan and Evan, I don't think there's anything that would have stopped the Cavs from winning a championship this year, to the champs, the Thunder.
The only thing I was worried about all year long was Boston. And then once you had the Tatum injury and everything else associated with it, that was up in smoke.
So I do think, like, I'm starting to allow, hey, the draft's passed and they haven't done diddly squat. I'm not trying to be cynical about it either. We're getting to a point where I'd be surprised, because I think you're going to be able to talk yourself into, well, hey, we kept it all together last year. We ran it back and look how well it worked. And here's the other thing. There's no pressure on the Cavs. Every person who's analyzing the Cavs or teams in the East who might have fallen short of expectations last year, to a man, the thing is, well, the East is wide open and injuries.
Which in turn, I don't feel this way, but most people then would suggest it's risky to go ahead and do something like that. I give GMs credit and presence of basketball operations. I give them credit in these moments when they put the pedal to the metal, so to speak, and they really try to make it as best as they possibly can. Other people just look at it as too risky.
I also think, and maybe this is fair or unfair, I think people have forgotten how just absolutely disappointing the Cavs bouncing out in the second round was. I think there are a lot of people who analyze the Cavs who are talking about them as a regular season team and not as a postseason team.
Do you think it's just because on a national scale, we just had a lot of teams that ended up being very disappointing?
Yes. Yeah, I think the Cavs have kind of been blotted out by Boston and New York.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And again, like, that's okay. That's a pass you can use. But do we want to use a pass or do we want to win an NBA championship? Because the Cavs will be, listen, as long as they've got these four guys, I think they're going to win a butt ton of regular season games. But the Cavs will tell you this offseason whether they're in the pursuit of winning a championship or the pursuit of almost. And listen, maybe next year, maybe it looks different. Maybe you get bounced out in five games of the Eastern Conference Finals. But we're getting very close to, like, we have so much. I mean, three seasons together for a core. And when I say core, I'm guys like Isaac Okoro, guys like Dean Wade. We have so much information,
right,
that just tells you where they are. And if you disregard that information, that's okay. It really is. Like, winning a lot of games, being a great regular season team, and getting bounced out in short order in one round of the playoffs or another, yeah, a lot of fans are going to be quite happy with that. I just think you've never had a better chance to win an NBA championship, and why not take that swing? Especially in the East, as opposed to like the West, where I think some teams are chasing dumb moves.
It's very early. It's very early. So I'm gonna keep an open mind to the idea that anything can still happen.
The Lead, coming up in 5 minutes right here on 92.3 The Fan.